From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Next week, the Royal Commission into Aged Care is holding hearings into the response to COVID in the sector. COVID initially hit aged care in Sydney with 19 deaths among the residents of Newmarch House. Now it is having a devastating effect in Melbourne, ripping through a large number of homes and claiming many lives. The public will be looking to next week's hearings to provide insights into questions such as whether the aged care catastrophe could have been prevented and how well prepared the sector was. New South Wales Senator Concetta Ferravanti-Wells was the Shadow Minister for Ageing for 4 years in Tony Abbott's front bench. She recently made a detailed submission to the Royal Commission. It is highly critical of the flawed attempts by governments to reform the troubled sector, and in particular of the Abbott government's failure to implement the reform plan she worked up in opposition. She joins us today. Senator, aged care residents are frequently described as our most vulnerable citizens, and the Royal Commission in its interim report highlighted that they're being served very badly by the sector. Now the COVID outbreaks have shown they're not being protected in a health crisis. What, in your opinion, is the root of this failure in Australia?
Well, I think, Michelle, when you do look at the interim report of the Royal Commission, it's very, very clear. What we've seen are countless reviews and inquiries to different governments. We know the problems are clear, the challenges are the same, and therefore if we only continue to tinker with a flawed system, then we know that the consequences will be dire. There are a couple of points in the interim report which I really would like to share in light of what you've just said. And there are two quotes, and I'd like to read them if I can. One says, given the manifold failings in the delivery, administration and regulation of services to older Australians, it is difficult not to be critical of successive governments' failures to fix the aged care system. And it is impossible to escape the melancholy conclusion that aged care services and the people who receive them have simply not been seen as a priority by successive Australian governments. And I think that, Michelle, that pretty well sums up the situation. We know that there was a very important report prepared by the Productivity Commission in 2011, the Productivity Commission Report Caring for Older Australians. This was what I based my work on before the 2013 election when I was the Shadow Minister. But more importantly, it's been a key reference point for the Royal Commission and for its interim report. And so that's why the Royal Commission has now said that they will be recommending comprehensive reform and major transformation of the aged care system so that it does chart a new direction. The next point, of course, is will there be the political fortitude to undertake and adopt the recommendations, what I hope will be bold and innovative recommendations of the Royal Commission.
But there have been so many reports into this sector. Why do you think it is so hard for governments to accomplish industry reform, which they always promise?
Well, this is the whole point, and this is really, from my perspective, before the 2013 election, the Coalition undertook that we would reform the system, the long-for promised reform, but which we didn't implement. Michelle, if I can take you to the back to the Productivity Commission, because the relevance of that report is just as important today as it was back in 2011. The importance of the Productivity Commission work is that it didn't just look at the systemic issues and the systemic problems in the industry that again have been highlighted by the interim report of the Royal Commission, but it actually looked at the funding. It actually looked at the funding components of aged care. And it looked at various things in relation to what the problems were, but also what Australians wanted. And it made this point that, of course, we're going to have to pay more for the care of older Australians as our population ages. The issue here is finding that right balance between the public funding and the private funding. It is a sensitive issue. It is a complex task. But most importantly, Michelle, the burden of that funding has to be equitable and the mechanisms of that have to be efficient. And in the end, the Productivity Commission concluded that it supported a pay-as-you-go system, a tax finance system, supplemented by higher co-contributions and a lifetime, basically, cap. But also we have to remember that we've got a baby boomer generation coming through, which is more financially able to contribute to care and for whom choice will be a very important component. But more importantly, we have to look at the dependency ratio, i.e. the people of working age, for every person aged 65 and over. Now, in 1978, that was 7 people. Today, it's 4.2 people. By 2058, it'll be 3.1 people. And so, therefore, when you are considering reform, you cannot just look at what is done. You have to look at the whole funding issue. But you also have to look at a system that gives older Australians the care they need, when they need it, and wherever they need it. And the basic fact that most people do want to stay in their own home and only go into residential care as a last resort. So put all of this together and you understand the complexity, but you also understand that when you do talk about reform, it's not one single issue. It's many things together that have to be done at the same time rather than just tinkering on one or two issues.
Well, if we go to the bottom line here, do you think that the consumers of aged care should be paying a greater proportion, or should the taxpayers be contributing a greater proportion? We're talking here about the overall system.
The reality is that there will be more being paid for the care of older Australians simply because the population is ageing and so there are more of us who do need care. What is important is the various components of that, Michelle. And so therefore, as the Productivity Commission did in its report, a pay-as-you-go system, of course, tax finance supplemented by co-contributions. And so that opens up that whole issue. And this is really where I'm coming from. We know what the systemic problems are. We know that they've been around for a long time. So what I did back in 2013 is looked at the Productivity Commission, saw how that could be rolled out in a practical way, devised a series of possible solutions, and then road tested that as I travelled around Australia. But can I also add, Michelle, that I've had an interest in aged care for a long, long time. In the early 1980s, I became a founding board member of an aged care facility here in the Illawarra. And over the ensuing years, and that's almost 40 years, I have to add, I've continued my engagement with the sector, and that included the 4 years as a Shadow Minister for Ageing. I also represented Health and Ageing in the Senate. I consulted widely with many, many aged care stakeholders, everybody from wellbeing right through to palliative care. I visited hundreds of aged care facilities across Australia, but combined that also with some personal experience, Michelle. My father had a long battle with dementia and ultimately died, and my mother passed away earlier this year, the very aged care facility that I helped found. So my experience has not been just in the political sphere. It's just not been in the community sphere. It's actually been at a personal level. So for me, I've actually had the opportunity to see this firsthand, to be embedded at various critical times and to see the operation of this system. It's good and it's bad. And so therefore, that's why I come at this from a very unique perspective. And that's why I wanted to be part of the process to contribute to the Royal Commission at this very appropriate time, at this very important public discourse of a very important issue to all Australians.
Can I just take you back to this pay-as-you-go system? How would that work?
Well, the issue is when you look at the aged care system and some of the components, if I can take you to some of the components of it, what people want is a system where they get their care when they need it. Now, the Royal Commission interim report talks about a system designed to meet the waxing and waning, to use the parlance. So, in other words, not every person is the same. There is not one typical aged care profile. So people need a mix of services, and those services vary from time to time. Now, we know that we've got a package system at the moment. We know that that's not working. There are not enough packages to go round. But also, Australians want to be able, they don't want to be just passive recipients of services. They don't want to depend on people. They want to be independent. They want to be able to choose where they live. They want to be able to choose the provider. But we also have to understand that Australians own their own home or they rent. And so critical to any reform is to be upfront with the principle of personal responsibility for accommodation and for your personal needs. And this is something that the Productivity Commission underlined in its report, both by the Commission and by many of the participants to that inquiry, that accommodation expenses are a personal responsibility throughout your life. But of course, there are people who do have needs for subsidies and those sort of things. And so therefore, you have to have a safety net situation. So what do people really want? They want the ability to be able to go to a place where they can talk to a person and they can have a conversation about what your needs, what my needs are, or what the needs of my mother or my aunt or my grandmother are. And so therefore, when you do design a system, you have to design a system that effectively responds to these needs of people wanting to stay in their own home as long as they can with some support, and that support varies from time to time. So there are two components to this, Michelle. There's how do you provide these day-to-day services? And I think that what we should have is a fully integrated health and aged care system under one umbrella where it is under Medicare. So people understand Medicare. They understand the co-contribution system. They understand how to access services under a Medicare system. So they know that they can go potentially to a provider of their own choice and access the services that they need. So if you unpack the aged care system and you unpack it into its various services and various components, then you start being able to provide these services in local aged care hubs, as I call them in my submission. So effectively, residential aged care facilities can become effectively one-stop shops where you can access services, much like you can access different medical services, different services plugged into your local community, local networks, and therefore, if you know your local aged care facility and you get your services from that local aged care facility, if and when the time comes that you have to add to those services, well, you've got a known provider, somebody that you're comfortable with. And if you ultimately have to go into residential care, you already know that provider and you are able to tap into that. Also, Michelle, one of the other problems that we face is that we don't have adequate medical services in aged care facilities. This is one of the problems we're seeing, what the Royal Commission is highlighting. And again, we need to make sure that there are adequate medical facilities in aged care facilities so that they can be provided to people when they need them, mostly in a sort of a multi-purpose way, so that the default is not automatically hospitalisation, which is strange and lonely places, especially for people with dementia. And the other important component to any reform is workforce. It is really important. Can I just say that having seen so many people who work in aged care facilities who are so dedicated, the actions of a minority have damaged the morale and standing of the overwhelmingly committed and dedicated staff in aged care. So most importantly, any reform requires addressing workforce shortages, upskilling, training, all of those things.
Isn't one of the problems here that you've got a very low paid workforce and a casualised workforce, often people working between facilities and in sort of hand to mouth situations with their own income?
Absolutely. This is one of the problems. And
how do you solve it?
Well, my suggestion is this, and this is what I road tested at the time. What is really important is that reform of this sector can only come about in a partnership between the government and the sector in all its diversity. You need certainty, you need flexibility, but you also need to have a sector that people want to work in. So my response to this is a five-year agreement. This is what we talked about back in 2013, an agreement between the sector, very similar to the pharmacy agreement framework, where both sides have clearly defined funding and responsibilities over that period. A five-year agreement, which would be consensus-based process, would depoliticise this important process of reform so that it would straddle different governments. It would impose realistic timeframes, potentially over a series of agreements. But most importantly, Michelle, it would take away that potential for scare campaigns to be run in this process, because you straddle different governments, you straddle different electoral cycles. So it becomes a depoliticised process. And so therefore, I think that would effectively work. I know that it would work. Certainly, I spent a lot of time talking to a whole range of different people in this sector, and they know that through that process, you can address the key areas of reform. And most importantly, you can address the key workforce issues that have stymied reform in this process for a long, long time.
Now, this is a federal government responsibility, and one of the big issues is regulation of these homes. And yet the regulatory system over many years just doesn't seem to have worked. And we've seen media exposés of quite dreadful things that have happened in facilities long before COVID, I might add, and people, families going in are often the watchdogs rather than, it seems, the regulatory agency. Why is this so?
Well, let me go back to what I talked about as systemic problems, and the Royal Commission has identified this. And one of the things that they have identified as a systemic problem is the aged care system is one of the most highly regulated, but it is also a very difficult one to navigate. It relies on a regulatory model that doesn't provide transparency or the incentive to improve. So let me give you some different components of it. Take the My Aged Care front door to the system. I mean, the Royal Commission is scathing about the complicated assessment processes, is about the jargon, about the overwhelming paperwork that is required, often the duplication of numerous assessment processes. And the whole aged care funding instrument, which they refer to as a nightmare, it's time consuming, it's complex, it has a myriad of different supplements and add-ons, and basically there's this more regulation. Regrettably, what this has done is whilst regulation is very important, please don't get me wrong, Michelle, it's very important to maintain standards. But when you have over-regulation and you place burdens on organisations with more regulation, it means more staff time taken away from residents to comply with those regulatory obligations. That leads to more inadvertence, and that leads to more mistakes. So it's a bit of a catch-22. The more regulation you have, the more potential there is for mistakes, and therefore resulting in a lack of confidence in the system. So instead of looking for innovative and workable solutions, using technology, potentially real-time reporting, and all of those things which could come about if you did have a partnership with the sector so that you had standardisation across the aged care sector, what's happened is that the default over many, many years when things have gone wrong, the automatic default position has been more regulation. So that's imposed more pressure on often a poorly skilled and underpaid staff still operating on the same amount of money. So that's really what it comes down to. You've got so many different systemic problems and which haven't been addressed in their totality. And it goes back to the point that I made before. And this is why, Michelle, it needs to be, as the Productivity Commission advocated in 2011 and as the interim report of the Royal Commission is advocating, it has to be a comprehensive reform and a major transformation of the aged care system in Australia to chart a new direction for the sector. And so, therefore, this is really what needs to happen. You need reform to address all of these systemic problems, not just one of them, not just two of them, but all of them together. They are all intertwined, and therefore any reform has to consider them in their totality. And that's where I think in the past there's been piecemeal, there's been tinkering, there's been there hasn't been the comprehensive reform that's been necessary, and therefore respective governments have shied away. And then, of course, regrettably, in 2013, ageing was moved from health and ageing, where it should have stayed. It was moved over to the Department of Social Services, and as you can appreciate, you've got a lot of experience with government and you've seen it. When you do something like that, you move staff, you move thousands of staff, resources are lost, time is lost, momentum is lost. And so therefore, eventually it moved back in 2015. So you've had this, then of course, that's been combined with this merry-go-round of ministers come and gone. You've had so many ministers under the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd era, and that's continued under the coalition.
Just on this question of ministers, do you think that it's regarded by governments as a bit of an also-ran area in terms of ministerial allocation? And when ministers are put in it, they're often juniors who are really looking to get out as soon as possible into something that's easier or more prestigious?
I have to agree with that. And the Royal Commission itself, this is not my point of view. This is the point of view of the Royal Commission. And it is saying it is impossible to escape the melancholy conclusion that aged care services and the people who receive them have simply not been seen as a priority by successive Australian governments. Now, to me, health and ageing are part of and should be part of system. We have an ageing population, and therefore it is important that both health and ageing be part and be under the same umbrella, they be on par and they be afforded the same par in cabinet to give them the importance that is deservedly required of this portfolio to fix, I think, both these systems, because it's important. You don't just stop at the health system and then go into aged care. These are part of the same system, and therefore they should be under one umbrella and should be given and afforded the same respect.
Now, let's just move to finish up specifically to the COVID crisis. What do you think are the main reasons why the system has failed or the government has failed to protect people when COVID hit, to protect residents?
Well, I think, Michelle, that the aged care sector has been deteriorating for quite some time. And, you know, it's very clear as to where we are today. I think that it's on the brink of collapse. It does need major overhaul. And indeed, I think that what has happened with the coronavirus, it has just simply tipped an already precarious sector into effectively the situation that we are seeing at the moment. So there were challenges already there, and I think that COVID has only exacerbated what was already an industry on the brink of collapse.
And the Royal Commission is holding a week of hearings, several days of hearings next week about the COVID situation in aged care. Tell me what would be the four or five main questions you would be asking witnesses if you were the Royal Commission.
Well, the questions I'd be asking how could you have avoided the situation that you were facing? What was it about, what is it about the system that has led to you being in this difficult situation? How has the framework that currently exists, particularly in relation to the areas that I've canvassed, whether it's in relation to the funding system, whether it's in relation to the assessment processes and all of the different things that I've discussed, how has that exacerbated your situation? What was in place to assist you in the event of a pandemic? Where have you found that the intersection between health and ageing has fallen over? Where has that not worked for you? Why? Where could you have performed a better response if you'd had better medical services available in your aged care facility? And what workforce was required to have been available to you in your aged care facility to meet the potential of a pandemic?
Well, there are a good list of questions that we hope there'll be some answers to in the evidence next week. Senator, thank you very much for talking with us today about this very, very topical and important issue. That's all for the Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.